Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Vic Nizar in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. We continue our NHL draft coverage day two, about to get underway. NHL draft coverage is brought to you by the Vancouver Giants. It's never too early to get your Vancouver Giants season tickets. Tickets start at under $19 at vancouvergiants.com/season tickets. You can interact with the show at all times via the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox 650-650. As we get ready for day two, Canucks will have pick 47 in round two and pick 65 in round three. And given that we just wrapped up round one about 15 minutes ago, this should be a nice long day.
Yeah, a quick turnaround. So we brought in the heavy hitter, Vic Nizar, help us out tonight.
Do you think this round will go faster? Today will go faster than round one?
Definitely Steve Yzerman seems to think not.
No, but you know what? I'm really glad and really happy for all the NHL GMs who got to be comfortable and got to stay in their cozy offices and can take their sweet time and, you know, to hell with the entertainment value. 4.5 hours, portable product. But you know what? I'm really happy the GMs will be able to sleep in their own beds tonight and feel good about themselves.
At least you guys brought me here to talk from the draft house. I don't know if we have like a separate room where my microphone is. Or
something. The interview room that went over really well with all the fans watching the draft yesterday.
I don't mind if you try new things, but was that not Gary Bettman sabotaging the draft? So you guys want to decentralize? I'm going to make this the longest, worst draft possible, so we'll never go back to this.
Yeah, I'm very pro trying new things and all that. And again, this is what the GMs wanted, so you try to execute it as best as you can. Man, this was somewhere along the stage we said, you know what, we got to do this. We have to centralize the draft and we all have to be together because this is going to be hard to pull off.
Ridiculous.
It was not great.
So we do have some news this morning. There's a couple of things ongoing. One being the Calgary Flames have announced it's reported that they have signed Kevin Ball, defenseman, to a 6-year deal with a $5.35 million cap hit.
Wow.
Sat, your eyebrows just raised there.
That's a lot of money for Kevin Ball. But you know what?
Even my eyebrows right now. I'm so excited.
Okay, I will say this because you guys have talked about this a lot. We do have to start really reframing what these contracts look like, right? Especially where the cap is going. And we're seeing teams take these big chances on players on their second deals. And if you believe in a player, your chance to get him locked into a team-friendly contract is now, because if he starts playing well on a bridge deal, you're paying significantly more. So this is the trend. We're going to see these players get paid right away.
Reframing the AAV, necessary step that everyone's got to go through, right? Yeah. We've been through 6 years of this flat cap. Absolutely. The term is where I'm struggling with right now. And it was something I was chatting about yesterday with the reported Connor Garland extension, right? 6 years. Like, that's the bit where I feel like I'm struggling. It's like you're capping upward mobility for players to come in. Like, Kevin Ball, again, like, what's the best case scenario for Kevin Ball here over these next 3 years?
Kind of the season he just had. Like, he was third on the team in ice time, had 20 points. Like, that's, you're kind of hoping he keeps doing that.
But that's like, if you're playing 20 minutes a game,
being
a top four defenseman, I mean, that's worth $5-7 million.
Yeah.
But Calgary's integrating a lot of D-men into the lineup.
Yeah. You got Zane Parrick. You got guys coming.
Are you putting ceilings on players to have the upward mobility within your franchise? And that's the bit. Like, I understand, like, hey, awesome job for Kevin Ball. Huge contract. He's going to get an opportunity this season. Same thing for Connor Garland. But from an organization's point of view, like, this is the bit where this changeover from the flat cap to the growth cap era is how our team's going to navigate this. And in this market, again, we're looking at, here comes, again, we'll just use Garland as the reference, right? Here comes Lekkerimäki. Here comes Hoglander. Here comes Linus Karlsson. Sherwood had a good season. And again, we can go through the host of other AHL guys that are pushing through. What is the upward mobility to push a guy now? Because he's solidified now in a spot. Third line is my floor, and I'm here for 6-7 years now.
Yeah, we've seen a couple of other signings. Justin Sortif, of course, local boy, just traded to the Washington Capitals. He signs a 2-year deal, I think, at $8.25 per after getting traded from the Florida Panthers to the Washington Capitals.
Poor guy, just a year too early.
Yeah.
Mint salary is about to jump up a bit.
I know, it's going to be $8.50 in a couple of years, and that'll be $1 million by 2030, I think it is.
Only a handful of NHL games for him, but obviously Washington making a big bet on him with that second round pick going to Florida. First pick of the second round is owned by the San Jose Sharks. They had a couple picks yesterday, took the local boy Ravensbergen with their 30th selection in round one. So the North Van native was thought to be the top goalie off the board. Obviously that didn't end up happening, but that's what is on tap. For the Vancouver Canucks, yesterday they select Braden Coutts with the 15th overall pick. I see a lot of at least draft industry experts saying there was better options for the Canucks on the board. Personally, I like the pick. Bick, we didn't get your take on the draft show last night, so what do you feel about Braden Coutts?
I went into it saying that there's a handful of players here, and they almost got Jackson Smith. He would have been like number one on the list here. If a manager, Brady Quinn, got to you, or a Brady Martin.
I don't know if they should draft Brady Quinn.
Well,
I don't know.
Hindsight's
2020. That
confused.
Wasn't a good pick for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
it was a QB number 35 within a 3-year frame.
Brady Martin. You know, I was thinking about Mason West, and I was thinking about
also a quarterback.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right. You got my QEs confused. Carter Bear, right? There's a handful of guys that if they were available at 15, the pick was the right selection. And you see Braden Coutts, I'm a fan. Like, I know that there was Victor Ekblad. I know you could have taken Cole Reschny. The Blues took a winger in Carboneau, right? There were guys that were tantalizing skill profiles, certainly. I like the, and I love the quote he had with you guys.
Yeah.
The mentality mindset, right? And this organization desperately needs people like this. I've sat here and I said, like, Elias Pettersson's a fantastic talent and all that. I don't want 20 Elias Petterssons.
Yeah.
You need diversity in attributes and skill sets and mentalities. And this guy has a different profile. And that quote and just hearing him in the Zoom call and the overall mentality that he has, that's the type of person I want to bet on.
Yeah.
Well, and that's we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but you know, you're really big into the NFL draft. Guys that have that competitive drive and are the way he is are the guys that usually go really high in the NFL, and that's usually one of the biggest precursors to success, because that's the type of mentality and person somebody has that's going to do everything necessary to be a pro, right? And one thing which was super cool, I was reading Drance's piece on The Athletic, and he spoke to some of the Seattle coaches too that have coached Braden. And it was a great story, and it's worth your read if you have a subscription. But, you know, talked about how he was going through an injury, Braden Coutts, and he wasn't playing for a couple games. But they have the scratches who skate, kind of do a two versus two drill versus coaches. And he's so competitive that even in those drills, he goes out despite being injured, and he puts a hurt on the coaches, right? Like, there's like the coaches had lumps after that, and he just does not want to lose. And anything he does, he wants to win. And that mentality doesn't mean he's going to be good, but usually the people that make that step have that characteristic, and at least he exhibits that.
Value winning, right? Yeah. And based on the leadership capabilities, based on the responsibility that it really seems like he takes on being someone that pushes everyone to win, that's a huge, huge thing that this organization needs.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's 5'11 and a half to 6 feet tall. I've seen him be listed at 6. I've seen him be listed at 5 and a quarter. We don't know exactly, but he's somewhere in that range. I think at the combine we'll double check, but it's around 6 feet. But he's got a thick build. Like, he's already 186. He's probably going to play at 200 pounds. And we talk about size, and you guys know, I mean, you know, I love size. But if you're 5'11", 6 feet, 200 pounds, and you play a strong two-way game, you can be a very effective center. I mean, look at some of the best centers in the game. That's Sidney Crosby's build, for instance, right? So it comes down to being strong enough and sturdy enough, but then just having that killer mentality. And if he can continue having that drive, he can be a real nice player for the Canucks one day.
The quote Bick is referencing, we had posted it yesterday at Sports at 650. You can also find it on the podcast feed, the entire interview with Braden Coutts from the show last night during the first round. I don't know too many guys that compete as hard as I do. And it's a little bit brash, but he's, by all accounts, he lives up to that. When you read all the draft profiles, you hear from his coaches, and you hear what the Canucks really liked about him as well.
But that's the right kind of brash you want. I don't want the, like, oh, I'm going to dangle through a guy and put him on the ice and he won't know what hit. That's just, it's internal brashness. It's, I know what I'm capable of doing and I'm willing to do. And those are the guys that go ahead and are going to try to maximize their potential.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to bet on that every single time.
We have a reaction on this. Lost Lagoon Sam says, Coot's ability to step up in U18 as a point guy, as well as a leader, reminds me of Sam Bennett. Maybe he tops out at 50, 60 points in a season, but if he can turn it up in the playoffs, that's what this team needs. And somebody else texts in and says, I love Coot, unicorn pick. And the other thing is a large number of the players that were drafted as centers above him will probably be wingers in the future, and he's going to be a center.
Excellent. Excellent point.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. And I've been talking about this with you guys here recently. Mm-hmm. I think I might have a new draft philosophy of just draft centers, right? you can move them to the wing, but you can't do it the other way around. And just grab the centers. This guy's a natural center, and I just love the compete level. And this organization needs this guy.
Right shot centers are hard to come by.
Also, right shot. We didn't mention that.
You know, he's already profiling as a guy with the compete level and the faceoffs. And yes, you want to see more offense out of his game, even though he was over a point a game. But as I said yesterday on the show, I talked to one scout that did say, there's more offense there than you see in his numbers.
Because the people that are willing to compete like he does are also willing to sacrifice for their teammates as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
But also, one thing about his game, and I spoke to people about this too, he doesn't have as many flashy plays, and we talked about this yesterday, because he's going to make the right play. And there are so many times where you could take a chance and do something flashy and risky, and maybe you get away with it because it's a WHL and you're better than half these guys, but it's not a smart play that's going to translate. And he doesn't have a lot of those plays in his game, and that takes away some flash, but there's real maturity to how he plays the game.
If we're comparing it to the Sam Bennetts of the world,
mm-hmm.
again, Sam Bennett, 50, 60-point player, but is there a benefit to the other guys that are on his line because he does so much other stuff as well? And do those guys get 7 to 10 more points of the season because Sam Bennett's on their line? So, yeah, it could be 50, 60 points for a Braden Coots, and maybe that's the ceiling, but what is the ancillary benefits of those around you as well?
So, Braden Coots, the 15th overall selection, Canucks will have the 47th pick here in the second round when it does start.
So quickly, because people are texting in and saying Coots is actually 5'10". So he was measured in at the combine at 5'11.5".
Yeah.
That was the measurement at the combine.
So that is the latest measurement.
Yes.
He's
still growing.
He still could grow another inch or two, maybe. Yeah, it's possible.
So the measurement, again, at the combine, 5'11.5", which... I mean, hey, if I, you know, I'm like 5'11.5".
Yeah.
I say I'm 5'11 in a bit, but you can excuse somebody for saying
they're
6 feet.
I can't pull that off anymore. I used to say, 5'11 and a quarter.
You're definitely not 5'11".
No. I've shrunk. I'm old.
I'm 5'6 when I get about 8 hours sleep.
Yeah. I'm like 5'11.5", but I refuse to say I'm 6 feet tall. But maybe I should.
You know why? Because you have integrity, because you compete.
Okay, so that's the story on Braden Coots. Canucks, we talked to Patrick Alvin last night. He said they're still working on things. We'll see how things progress over the next couple of days. As far as the trade front is concerned, how are things going there for the Canucks at?
So as of 8:30-ish this morning when I had a couple conversations, the Canucks were not close to anything quite yet. And I know there's a lot of discussion around Bowen Byram as well. That's been really taken off, and Dreger reported quite a bit on that yesterday and suggestions that the Canucks are still one of the teams mostly in on Byram. I'm not saying the Canucks are not in on Bowen Byram, but the Canucks still want to add a center. And the Canucks, as Alvin mentioned yesterday to us and to the media, they still have a desire to perhaps bring Brock Besser back. So a lot of moving parts here, because if you're trying to bring a center in and try to bring Besser back plus get Bowen Byram, a lot of money has to be shifted in and out. And even if you want to get a center and not get Bowen Byram, if you want to keep Besser, you still have to move money out. And something Alvin mentioned yesterday, and I'm not sure he got picked up in, but I kind of double checked on it. They are looking at moving some guys out potentially here. You know, so he said we might have to do a couple things to move things around and then maybe go back to Besser, which essentially is him saying if we can shift some salary around, get a center, then we can do other things. Maybe they trade for Byram. It's just going to be complicated, I think, to trade for Byram, trade for a center, and also have enough space to go after Brock Besser. I'm not sure you can do all three of those things.
They have been reported to be the team that's been most hot on Byram. But, again, every time we've looked at the Byram possibility, it's like, well, How does it make sense? Because you've already got a lot of money committed on the back end, and you really need to upgrade the forward group in some way, shape, or form. As it stands right now, Canucks have what? Ballpark $7 million and change in salary cap space, depending on how they fill out their roster. Maybe it could be a little bit more, but that's not enough to even sign Brock Besser and what he's going to get in free agency. Even the offer they gave to him earlier in the year that was reported, $8 million per over 5 years, you don't have $8 million of cap space. And if you did, you'd be able to sign Besser and do nothing else. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't help your center issue. So how are you going to create a little bit more space? And maybe that's where, you know, some of the reports of Dakota Joshua and Teddy Bluger, the Canucks being open to moving some of those players is to open up a little bit of extra salary is maybe where that's stemming from.
I'd actually love to keep Teddy Bluger, but if you're looking to move, create a little bit of space and get another center, you have Heat, let's say another center, and you have Elias Pettersson
and Ratu,
Max Sasson. I can understand then moving Bluger out and then going with the cheaper option, and that would clear up about what, $1.1 million in cap space compared to the cheaper option you can bring up. So it's not insignificant, but I think that's really dependent on, you have to find a center first before you move on from Bluger.
But of the guys that we can talk about of potential exits here, who probably carries the most value, or the least? It might be Bluger.
Most value, yeah.
The least would be Bluger to me.
Them than Joshua, you think?
Yeah.
But Bluger's got 1 year left at 1.8.
Yeah, so. And again, he is a center, but the profile, the rarity profile for Dakota Joshua,
yeah,
some
it's
teams
true.
Look at that and say, hey, I can't find that. I can't find that body type.
Well, and he had a bad year, but look at Yakov Trenin, the contract he signed, also not coming off a big year. Similar size profile. He only had 7 goals last year, making over $3 million. You know, so there could be a market around it. Would Joshua make more sense, not as a cap dump, but in a deal where you're bringing a center back? Hypothetically speaking, let's say you're talking to the Islanders.
Yeah. If you're talking to the Islanders and, you know, the name that comes to mind is probably J.G. Pageau, who's been rumored to possibly get moved out as the second round is just about to get underway. San Jose making the 33rd pick in the draft, and they've taken Simon Wang out of the OHL, a 6'6 defenseman that sat, as you mentioned, moves pretty well.
Yeah, and you know what? I had a chance to watch this kid a little bit, and we talked about him briefly on the show yesterday about could he go late first round, maybe in early in the second round. He was born in Beijing, played hockey in Canada, and he is an incredible skater. You watch him skate for a guy his size, there's a lot to like about what he can do. Now, I think it's going to take some time, of course, for him to be a National Hockey League player, but he's a really interesting player, and I think it would be really cool to see a player from Beijing, or I mean born in Beijing in China, come out and have a level of success, and there's a lot to like about his game. And I spoke to some people that thought because of kind of where he came from and being unexpected, that maybe that created a little bit somewhat of skepticism around his game, but I've heard that people think he could be a massive steal. So not surprised to see a Simon Heoksi Wang go 33rd overall.
When you're 6'6 and you can move pretty well, that's a decent bet to make in the National Hockey League. Montreal is going to trade up here for the 34th pick from Carolina. Shocker, Carolina trading down yet again, which never happens. No, it always happens.
It's working for them.
Yeah.
It's working for him.
They did it yesterday as well. So Simon Wang, the first pick off the board by The Athletic. The top remaining skaters as the second round gets underway. Blake Fidler out of the Edmonton Oil Kings, the son of Vern Fidler, 6'4", right shot, D-man, over 200 pounds already coming into his draft year. Malcolm Spence, a player we talked about quite a bit last night during the opening round of the draft, and Milton Gastrin out of Modo, center, Swedish centerman, are the top three remaining players, according to The Athletic.
Yeah, and there's a few other guys, like Eric Nielsen, for instance, being a player that I know some industry people have been a lot higher on. We could see him go a little bit higher at this stage. And I think you have to keep an eye on some of these Russian kids, whether it's a Prokhorov or Alexander Zhirovsky. I think
Montreal just took him, yeah.
There you go. Zhirovsky just went off the board. So we're talking
Montreal
about
Montreal traded
players
up to take him, yes.
Yeah, and he was a guy, you know, there was some buzz when talking to some draft people that some of those Russian players, and we saw the Russian goalie being the first goalie taken, might end up going in the first round. They didn't, but these are interesting players that haven't been scouted as closely in person, and that's where there could be a lot of value. Can Are a couple of these Russian players slipping through the cracks that can be real difference makers down the road?
Zhirovsky probably goes well in Montreal. They've got Demidov that's come over too. So a nice winger with offensive upside would make sense as Montreal continues to build out. And they made the big move yesterday. It's been the biggest move of the weekend, getting Noah Dobson from the New York Islanders in exchange for the 16th and 17th picks. And, of all the teams in that Atlantic division that are trying to get up and continue to push, you know, Montreal was one of them. They made the playoffs this year, but now they go out and get Dobson. It's like, okay, this could be a team that's really going to try and punch up with the Leafs and the Lightning and the Floridas of the world.
This, to me, seems like the most likely team to be the next wave to try to knock off Florida on their perch.
Yeah.
They needed to be aggressive this summer if they wanted to take that step. Huge first swing to bring in Noah Dobson. Maybe it takes them out of the 2C market, because how many other assets are they going to dip into? But everyone's tantalized by a group of five players up front, and now they're starting to build the back end as well, and it looks like there's a trade here.
Yes, so LA Kings defenseman Jordan Spence traded to the Ottawa Senators for the 67th pick this year, so third round pick and a sixth round pick next season. So we knew he was on the block and he gets traded.
Makes so much sense. It's crowded there in LA on that right side. Doughty's there. They got to make room for Brian Clark. At times, they were flip-flopping Gavrikov sometimes, and there was just no upward mobility for a player like Jordan Spence, who played like important minutes for them this year because of Doughty's injury. And this is with the right-sided hole that Ottawa has, another credible body that goes in there, clever puck mover, maybe a little undersized, and so maybe that's why he didn't get the full minutes in LA. But it's a trade that this is like a low risk trade here for Ottawa. This is a big win for them, and obviously LA needed to kind of clear up some bodies there.
They also took Henry Brustevich yesterday in the draft as well, did the LA Kings. Jacob Rombach, the latest selection at 35 by the Nashville Predators. Another defenseman off the board here early in the second round.
A lot of size.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, not only a D-man run here, we're getting a huge D-man run here. And this is kind of what Nashville is going for. As Barry Trotz said a couple of years ago, they're going for the home run picks, right? If this works out, the size profile, you get your natural shutdown D-man.
I don't know if size was ever like out of style.
No, it wasn't.
It's definitely back in style.
It is, in a big way. And I love how the Preds have gone about their draft so far this year. So they took, obviously, Brady Martin with their fifth overall pick. They took Cameron Reed.
Riker Lee.
Riker Lee, too. Yeah. So it's Cameron Reed and also Riker Lee. So Cameron Reed was a smaller, diminutive defenseman they took, and now they took a massive defenseman sixth overall. So they've taken a talented winger in Riker Lee, a strong two-way center in Brady Martin, a talented, smaller defenseman with a lot of skill, and then a big, burly defenseman with a lot of size. There are four picks, first and second round, three first-round picks. That's a nice variety from the Nashville Predators so far.
They're building the lineup right there.
Yeah.
It's a whole lineup right there.
The Philadelphia Flyers on the clock with the 36th selection in the draft. This question from Blue Line Bar Down. Does Besser make the team worse with his foot speed? Hasn't the game changed since he was drafted? Besser's never been a fast player, but he's a smart enough player that he knows where to be, and he reads the game well enough that he always seems to find himself in the right areas in order to make those plays. Yeah, his foot speed can be an issue at times, but again, as his career suggests, he's been good enough to be able to overcome whatever those foot speed issues have been through his career.
Yeah. It just means like you have to find the speed somewhere else on the line.
Yeah.
And then, okay, if you have it with Hedl, Hedl likes to dominate the puck. Is he a clever enough passer into spaces where Brock Besser's going to score you goals?
Mm. Yeah.
And it's just that integration of like when you're not a play driver and you're not the line driver, the specifics of what the players that are with you have to complement you, and that bit to me feels like it's a bit of a struggle right now.
Again, the trade, Jordan Spence going to the Ottawa Senators. First player moved today here on day two of the draft. We'll see what else happens. Basketball, Phil says, get some coffee, boys. It's going to be a long day. I would say so. I mean, somehow we've only got through three picks here on day two of the draft.
Oh, no, three. You're right. We've done three picks so far. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, my bad.
Usually day two goes a lot quicker.
Yeah, they didn't start making the selections until like 9:20-something. Okay. And then we saw actually 33, 34, and 35 come pretty quickly. Yeah. And now the Rick
Tocchet. I bet you there's a connection issue right now. Someone's Zoom isn't connected. And, yeah. Rick Tocchet fires. He's hitting the computer. He's like, the draft picks are in the computer.
They're in the computer. How where are the draft picks? They're too small.
It was easier when there was just a bunch of tables and you just pushed a button and the microphone went on. You're like, we select from the Saginaw Spirit or whatever it is, and away you go.
This text comes in. Feels like a really light return for Spence. Some LA media folk seem to not be too pleased.
For right-handed D-man, yeah, that feels kind of light.
It's a good depth play it's a good low-cost buy for Ottawa.
So it's a great value play. But again, like, there's a scenario you put yourself in when you have all these bodies and you can't get them into the lineup. You're relegated to a spot of like, oh, well, we just got to move this guy here because we've got an overall depth issue.
And correct me if I'm wrong. I believe he is waiver eligible as well, right? Yes, he is waiver eligible. So that always... We actually sort of was the surprise. He's also waiver eligible. He got a second round pick. But generally, when you're trading for a player who is waiver eligible, you're not getting that type of value. Mm-hmm. And they got a third, and it's a pretty high third, 67th overall and a sixth round pick. So that maybe puts it in that, you know, high third or maybe late second round type of value. But what do people expect? When you have a player who's waiver eligible, hasn't established himself as a National Hockey League player full-time, has questions about his defensive game, those players are going to be available a little bit cheaper. That always kind of happens. So I'm not surprised by the price. I think if you thought he was going to get more, that to me was the bigger miscalculation.
Seattle has traded up for the 36th pick.
And, that was the holdup.
It's our second trade-up here of the early second round as teams... maybe have some first round draft grades on some guys that have dropped into the second round and they're feverishly trying to get up into the top of the second round to get that pick.
There are a number of them. One player we mentioned yesterday as a super interesting player was Malcolm Spence. He is still available, and I think he's a guy, especially with some of the health issues he had in his draft eligible year, has a lot of boom potential next year, and I think the team that's going to take him here early in the second round, or perhaps if the Canucks get him, that's going to be a hell of a pick.
It was Blake Fidler going to Seattle Kraken.
Blake Fidler with the 36th pick in the draft going to Seattle, just down the I-5, 6'5", 220, shoots right, son of an NHLer, so he's a lot bigger than his dad.
Yes.
Vern Fidler.
How's his Bieksa impersonation?
I mean, maybe we'll have to have Blake on one day to figure that one out.
Can you also imitate Kevin Bieksa?
Blake Fidler to the Seattle Kraken, who they are definitely trying to obviously improve their status as well moving forward. You know, kind of like every team in the league outside of Pittsburgh, everybody is trying to get better and push for the playoffs, which makes it very much a seller's market when it comes to trades. We'll come back with the 37th pick. The Washington Capitals are next on the clock, and I've just been informed we are national, so Calgary, hello. Toronto, hello. We are on the Sportsnet Radio Network, continuing with day two draft coverage on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're back on Canuck Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Bick Nizar. Our draft show continues we are national, so I should stop calling it Canuck Central. It is... NHL draft coverage on Sportsnet 650 and across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
But I'm sorry, this is going to be a Canuck focus. Apologies.
We've got a few picks that have just gone through the books and also a trade that's just been announced. The Buffalo Sabres sending Connor Clifton to the Penguins and number 39 in the draft, which they drafted Peyton Kettles, defenseman, to the Penguins. Kyle Dubas continuing to make moves here. He's been the busiest GM. Trade-wise so far at the draft. And Connor Timmins and Isaac Béliveau going to the Buffalo Sabres. Just off the board now, Jack Murtaugh going to the Philadelphia Flyers at 40. They also selected Carter Amico at 38. And the Washington Capitals, who always seem to be getting good value in the draft, they got Lakovic late last night, late in round one. Really, really impressive skating, size, speed, ability, all those things. Winger that went late in round one to Washington. They also get Milton Gastrin, who is one of the top-rated Swedish forwards in the draft.
We have a trade, not a Canucks trade. Elliot Friedman reporting that the Anaheim Ducks have finally traded John Gibson to the Red Wings.
Okay.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Does it?
No, I think for Detroit, that makes a ton of sense.
Does it actually?
Well, they need a solid goaltending bet right now.
I guess so. Well, don't they have 1,000 goalies?
Well, as they trade for a goaltender, the Carolina Hurricanes draft Semyon Frolov, the Russian goaltender, 41st overall. So some goalie news here, but Friedman reporting that Anaheim has traded John Gibson to the Red Wings. You're right. They need a goalie. They have a lot of goalies that aren't very good.
Wait, this is two things can be true at the same time. They've got 1 million goalies, and they still needed a goalie. I don't know. Steve Yzerman, I hope he's not the one evaluating all these goalies, because he has missed on a number of occasions.
Sure.
Ville Husso, Jack Campbell. But how many more guys?
If they're going to try to make a step to make it to the playoffs, like, I don't know if I'm going in with Peter Mrazek and Cam Talbot.
Here's the thing. Peter Mrazek is going the other way. Okay, Elliot's mentioning Mrazek and two picks are going to Anaheim.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So they're getting rid of a goalie at least reach.
They needed some upside at goaltending.
They drafted a guy in the first round the other year. Sebastian Kosa. Isn't he one of the best goalie prospects around?
Yeah, but I mean, Gibson's not going to be there forever.
How old is he? 21, 22?
22 now.
Yeah. Okay, so you're going to put all your playoff hopes on a 22-year-old guy working his way through the NHL?
Reach, I can't believe
you ask Devin Levi and the Sabres how that went.
Well, I can't believe you're making us defend Steve Yzerman. I love crapping on the Red Wings.
Well, maybe stop collecting bad defensemen
on top of
goaltenders to help your goaltending issue.
Steve Yzerman was right about Jake Walman, all right? Come on. He was right about that. He shouldn't have added the second round pick, but he made the right
You play. Can be right about the guy and still make a bad move. Like, come on. Anyways.
The Red Wings, on top of their bad goalie room, still have a year left of Ben Chiarot, still have a year left of Justin Hall. Finally out of the Jeff Petrie contract.
We shouldn't make too much fun of them, because they're trying to move a guy like Andrew Kopp and retain some salary. And we don't know where the Canucks are going to find their center, but, you know, who knows where they end up knocking.
The New York Islanders, who got a lot of praise for what they did yesterday in the draft and their quick retool. Daniil Prokhorov going to the Islanders at 42.
Another one of these talented Russian players, and we're seeing them kind of go off the board here. Frolov, Prokhorov, Zhukovsky, three guys have now gone. All three of these players were, some thought, could go in the first round, and I like these picks a lot, but it's pushing some really nice players down. You know, we have some Canadian teams coming up making some selections here, and there's some really nice players still on the board. I know this draft has been criticized for not being the best draft, but I think people confuse with it not being the best draft with the top 50-60 is pretty good still.
Yeah,
there's some really nice players still to be selected,
and you're still seeing some players continue to drop down the board as we get closer to a Canucks selection at 47th overall here. There is still a couple of those players that we mentioned off the top that have yet to be selected. Malcolm Spence, a name still to keep watching as one. Cameron Schmidt, the Vancouver Giants, really exciting player, ton of goal scoring in him. A little bit undersized at 5'7", but had an incredible draft-eligible year for the Vancouver Giants. Shane Vansagi of Michigan State, thought to be a first-round sort of talent that's still available as well.
Well, we can cross off Malcolm Spence now, as he's just been selected by the New York Rangers.
That was hopeful.
I really was. I mean, it was still four more picks to go until Vancouver picking, right? But I was really hopeful for him to be there. Really nice player. And the story goes, he had a tongue injury this year where his tongue got split and he ended up getting it infected, and he still played through it. He lost a lot of weight, couldn't really eat solid food, and he still played through it, had a productive year, scored over 30 goals. But there's so much more he can do if he's healthy, and I'm really curious to see what he does next year. He could be one of those guys that, because of some of the things that happened to him, held them back, and then he just shoots up next season. Considering his size combination, the physicality combination, he's got some nice hands. This can be a real steal, Malcolm Spence going 43rd overall.
He was just listed there on on TV at 190. I feel like he looks a lot bigger than that.
The only reason he's 190 is because he lost weight. Yeah. Like, he's going to be playing at 215, 220 in the National Hockey League. He's going to be a monster.
Yeah, at the combine, he was measuring it at 201.
Yeah.
So there you go.
But he was playing at 190 this year because he lost so much weight.
Malcolm Spence to the New York Rangers at 43. So the big trade so far, as just mentioned, the Anaheim Ducks sending John Gibson, the trade saga of the last, what, three summers at least?
Yeah. The minute that contract was signed, basically. Because, again, they signed him at the right time. They were competitive. They thought they could hang onto a window, and then it tailspinned right away.
John Gibson finally gets moved to the Detroit Red Wings for Peter Mrazek and two picks. The Red Wings now on the clock at number 44 here in the NHL entry draft. Kind of like... Would this not have made sense for the Oilers? I guess, you know, cap-wise, you know, maybe they need to open up some things. But, like, Stuart Skinner and a couple of picks going back the other way, that, I don't know, kind of feels like maybe something the Oilers could have been in on.
Yeah, it's just the money, though. Like,
do they have
Gibson's
the finances
contract.
To pull
the contract
for
Gibson
right
is the biggest thing, right?
Right? They lock in Trent Frederick. They're trying to sort out Bouchard and Brown and Perry and all these guys. You're right. Like, John Gibson certainly would be an upgrade. And something that they should try to aspire to, but now you can take Gibson off of the Edmonton destinations here because they're going to have to sort that out. But like they are in a cap situation. They've got the money. It just, what's the sequence of priorities for them?
Probably want to move out Victor Arvidsson before they start adding a big contract as well. And as they've mentioned, they want to add to their forward group as well.
The Red Wings have not selected a goaltender, much to Dan Riccio's surprise. They have drafted Eddie Genborg, the Swedish right winger, 44th overall.
So, I mean, Steve Yzerman probably fought for it. He's like, you know, at least one of these guys is going to hit. One of them has to, eventually.
There's still some goalies left on the board. But I think the guys that were supposed to go relatively high have been taken. I guess Alexei Medvedev is still available. That's another one of those Russian goaltenders. I think he's a guy to kind of keep an eye on here, potentially. Andrianov was taken, Semyon Frolov and Joshua Ravensburg, and obviously went in the first round as well.
Eric Nilsson off the board to the Anaheim Ducks.
Well, that was another guy. I was going to be like, you know what? If he's there, number hanging 47, around. Hanging around. But no, not happening.
Not quite there for the Vancouver Canucks. The Utah Mammoth are next on the clock at 46, and the Canucks then up at 47. So they are on deck, as all of us fantasy players know when you get the notification. You are on deck. That's where the Canucks currently are at number 47.
What platform are you playing on? I've never heard that before.
You've never heard that? But what, do you always do your drafts on mute?
I try to socialize with my friends. We all do live drafts.
I think it's the... It might be CBS. Yahoo? It might be CBS.
Yeah, okay. That was your impression of that was terrifying. I'd be unnerved, man.
That... Terrified. Like, hey, man, sorry.
You don't want a robot yelling at you? You are on the clock.
All right. So the... A mammoth is on the clock. The mammoth are on the clock right now. And then the Canucks coming in at 47. So people are asking, who is left for the Vancouver Canucks to draft here? There is one player, a bit of a, I wouldn't say a project, but a guy that we talked about, he could have potentially been a first-round pick. Shane Vansagi, the right-wing prospect who played in the NCAA this past year. He played a fourth-line role, but has size. He has good pace, can get a little bit faster, has nice hands. But if he develops and he takes a step and he plays up the lineup, he could be a real power winger who down the road can be a real nice player for you. And for me, of all the guys available, him is probably the most intriguing one. And I'd say maybe a guy like William Moore, a lot of talent. There's some questions about whether he's going to be able to put it all together, has some size, but you're looking to take some shots. And if you want to take a real big shot, then a guy like Cameron Schmidt. And I was going to mention Mac Pesnica, and he just was taken 46th by the Utah Mammoth. But there's some couple of nice players left, and Shane Vansagi is the guy that I would be very keen on for Vancouver at 47.
Just for me personally, this is just personal preference, not necessarily where they're going to go, but like a Luca Romano.
Yeah, that's another
very
nice player.
Interesting player.
Sounds
right?
Like a just... great player to me. Luca Romano.
There you go. I should have let you say it. But that style of player, too.
And I would also keep an eye on Jacob Inns Wozniak. He's another one of those guys that right-hander, can play center, can play left wing a little bit. He's kind of been slated to go in this range, and it wouldn't shock me if he's on the Canucks radar.
So the Canucks are on the clock. There are some options that they could be going with, as Cole McKinney is another name out of the National Team Development Program that you might want to keep an eye on here as well. You know, Canucks, they need more forwards into their group, and certainly that's something that they could be looking at here.
So we got the full trade now.
Oh, the Canucks made their selection.
Oh.
Alexei Medvedev, the goaltender, going at 47th overall to the Vancouver Canucks.
So the Canucks make their goalie selection, and they go 47th overall. Interesting. Now, we mentioned him being maybe the best goalie prospect remaining, and one of the Russian guys that hasn't been scouted as extensively because of all the stuff going on, of course, and not having many North American scouts getting to the games for Russian players. But there's a lot to like about his game, and we've seen him, of course, come across as well and play in North America. So there's a lot to like about Medvedev and his potential, but it's one of these things with these goalie prospects that you don't quite know exactly where they're going to land.
But I do like the timeline here that it makes sense for Vancouver, right? Because you are in a spot here with Shelovs and Demko right now. It's okay, what's the long-term stability here? There's this talk of the Demko extension. If you're now talking about a 4 or 5 year plan, and we knew at some stage that we're gonna have to draft a goalie this year, and you have Tolopilo, you have Ty Young. This just kind of puts the next guy on the carousel, and it makes a lot of sense for the overall timeline of how it integrates into your organization.
Yeah, he played for the London Knights last year, 912 save percentage, 279 goals against average. So obviously a player with some size, 6'2". But the Canucks have selected a goalie now with their second pick of the draft.
Alexei Medvedev of the London Knights to the Vancouver Canucks.
And the Flyers 48 take Shane Vanzaghi. He fits exactly what the Flyers are as a team.
We had a text earlier, 650-650. Someone texted in, says the Flyers are just drafting behemoths right now. And this really feels like such a Flyers draft, right? You think of Porter Martone. You think of
Jake Nesbitt.
But then they
traded
drafted
up to get Nesbitt.
They drafted Carter Amico as well, right? Like
6'6".
Physical. Can you play fast? Are you going to be in your face? Murtaugh as well. And now you throw in Vanzaghi as well. So it feels like a very on-brand identity-building draft for a new regime with the coaching staff in Philadelphia.
Yeah, he's already 6'3", 212, right-hand shot. If he gets a little bit faster, he's at the very least going to be a crash-and-bang big winger that has a little bit of goal-scoring potential. Like, I think he's going to be a guy who plays NHL games. Like, how high of the lineup can he play? But like, he's a guy that's going to make an impact.
Perfect text here. Justin and Barry, Ontario. Flyers are becoming old orange.
Yeah,
that's great. Awesome.
That is really good.
The scouting profile on him, you know, just as a freshman, didn't get to play a ton, but still was able to show a lot of his traits, a very high skill level, especially for a big man in Shane Vanzaghi. The Carolina Hurricanes are now on the clock after they've traded down about 17,000 times in the first two rounds of the draft.
Yeah, and I will say,
for
our listeners that are listening on 590 in Toronto and 960 in Calgary, please text us to the Dunbar Lumber 650-650 inbox. I know they're different inboxes, but that's the inbox we can see. So if you're in Calgary, you're in Toronto, text into 650-650 and we'll see your texts.
That is the best way to get in touch with the show and send in your thoughts. Charlie Chirotto is the latest select from the Carolina Hurricanes at 49. So we've got the New Jersey Devils now on the clock at number 50. As far as Canadian teams go, Calgary is coming up at 54 in the draft, and Toronto has their first pick of this NHL entry draft coming up with the last pick of the second at 64, and then the Canucks will be back on the clock at 65, the pick they got from the New York Rangers in exchange for Carson Soucy at the NHL trade deadline. So that is what's coming up as far as drafts are concerned. You know, there's been a lot of news over the last couple of days, and I guess the biggest one was Noah Dobson going to the Montreal Canadiens. But you've also seen some extensions take place. Sam Bennett signing an 8-year, $8 million per to stay with the Florida Panthers. And I know there was a lot of teams that were probably willing to give Sam Bennett a little bit more than that. But even at $8 million, I can't believe I'm saying this for the guy who just won the Conn Smythe, but even at $8 million, given his regular season production.
Don't say it.
Does it not feel like a big price?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. It's perfect. It's perfect in the overall NHL market. If he makes it to the free agent market and he got $10 million, okay, maybe a different conversation. But
I think it's perfect for the Panthers, because it, like
right, but that's all that matters.
Yeah, but if he goes to a poor team and now he's being asked to be the guy, you know, and help us get to the postseason, like then you're overpaying. But he fits perfectly with the Panthers.
The contract only matters in the context of who's signing it, and it's Sam Bennett and the Florida Panthers.
Yeah,
and it's a perfect marriage. It continues. He fits exactly what they're trying to do. He's. Again, he doesn't need to be the guy because there's Barkov, there's Lundell. They've got pieces around him. I just think, and it's not like ridiculously cheap. Again, he could have got 9.5 if he went to open market. So there was a certain price met, and he had the best contract year, right? You win the Conn Smythe in your contract year. That is an unreal. So I just felt like it's market value.
Yeah. No, I don't necessarily disagree with that. On the draft, so the 49th pick to the Carolina Hurricanes is Charlie Strato. He is the center prospect. And the 50th pick, the New Jersey Devils pick another center, Conrad Von Dirk. And the Boston Bruins at 51 are now on the clock.
It's moving a little bit better now with the NHL entry draft.
Yeah, and I know people are asking us here about Artur Shelov's in Vancouver. Now the Canucks have drafted Medvedev. Are they going to be trading Artur Shelov's? And to the point you made, Bic, when you look at the Canucks goalie situation, Artur Shelov's requires waivers, and they're on the verge of extending Thatcher Demko. There isn't going to be room for Shelov's, Demko, and Kevin Lankinen next season. And if Shelov's actually has a market, you'll lose him on waivers. The best thing to do is move him. And the Canucks talked about how they have Ty Young and Nikita Tolopolo for next year in the AHL. And now you have Medvedev coming in the ranks. If you can get something for Shelov's, now is the time to do it. Now, he was a sixth-round pick for you a few years back. So if you get... some people have said a third or a fourth. I run up and take that and don't look back if you can get a third or fourth round pick.
I suspect it would be closer to a five.
That's what I would expect. But again, yeah. I think as a sixth-round pick, if you get anything above where he was drafted, it comes off as a at least an asset that appreciated in value somewhat, right? But I think if Demko is staying, it just doesn't make sense to risk having Shelov's losing it for nothing. So if you can move him, the time would be to move him to get a pick.
To what you were mentioning earlier as well, do you move out a roster player that makes somewhere between $2 to $4 million and go get a center? So if you're trying to solve that too, and you're looking, okay, what other pieces do we have nominal? Okay, here's a guy that might have fourth round value. Do you just add it to this and say, hey, here's this more attractive spot? And there are certain teams I look at and say, could they use kind of an upside goalie in the overall system? Because it doesn't make sense for everyone. Because we just saw Florida just trade for Tarasov, right? Shelov doesn't make sense for them. They're trying to win 3 cups in a row. You can't have him backing up Bobrovsky. That's too much of a risk if something happens to Bobrovsky. But a team, as you mentioned, like J.G. Pageau, the Islanders makes a ton of sense, right? They're locked into Sorokin. They're probably looking for more upside. What are they going to do with Varlamov long term? That's a team that makes a ton of sense in that spot. And there's a handful of teams, you know, Detroit would have been one of them. I know we can add more goalies to Detroit, but they've now gone out and solved that with Gibson. But there are a bunch of teams where it kind of makes sense to do an upside bet as your backup goalie. He's kind of got the squeeze put on him of being in this 2-3 spot here, but where Vancouver is, it doesn't really make sense long term to have him there.
William Moore getting selected by the Boston Bruins, who have continued to get some pretty good value with where they've been selecting in the draft. Obviously, yesterday came away with James Hagans at number 7 overall when he was expected by most to be a top 5 pick in the draft. Was even thought about a year ago to be potentially the number 1 pick in this year's draft. Obviously, things changed after his freshman year in the NCAA, but now they get some good value here with William Moore as well.
Fun player.
Yeah, if you go back a year, William Moore was also a guy that people thought could be a top 10 pick in this year's draft. So, you know, if you go back a year and you told Bruins fans that we're going to get James Hagans and William Moore, they probably would have been very excited, right? And that's where development doesn't really go sometimes the way you expect, but a lot to like about William Moore. And he's going to the NCAA, I think, next year. We'll get a better read on where he's at. He played this past year with the U.S. and National Development Team and had a decent year. Nothing eye-popping in terms of numbers, but there's a lot of things to like about his potential.
They feel like classic Bruins... Sorry, they may not feel like classic Bruins players, but it feels like a good... Bruins idea of let's get these guys into our system, we'll teach them for a couple of years, and then they'll learn to play Bruins hockey. Yeah. And you think of Hagans and you think of Moore now, you know, I think of skill and speed. they learn the Bruins way, it's like you integrate that with how they play, and man, that is going to be difficult. If the development path works, which it always seems to with the Boston Bruins, they could have just stumbled into some studs there, because that stretch where they drafted Lysell just felt like such a departure from what they are, and now this feels like, hey, they're back to, if it works, it can really benefit for them. And I like the intentionality to it.
Well, a team that's needed centers.
Yeah.
Right. And they're obviously addressing that issue with the way that they've gone about this draft. Hey, it's fallen to them, so it works perfectly with their needs as a team, getting James Higgins and William Moore so far in this draft. But, you know, if you want better center depth, a good way to do it is to draft more centers. Mm-hmm. Just throwing that out there.
Just attack it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Canucks, if you look at the Canucks, look at most teams, and you see this year's draft too, you've seen the positions really come through. Look at the defensemen going, look at those centers being taken. They have been prioritized quite clearly over a lot of the wing prospects, unless you're a guy like Porter Marton who went pretty high.
So the draft continues. Theodore Hallquist is the latest selection by the Minnesota Wild. San Jose Sharks are now on the clock with number 53 in the NHL entry draft. The Islanders, we've kind of mentioned them a little bit. They had a really good day one at the draft. They get Matthew Schaefer at number one overall, go with Cam Acheson at 17, who is kind of like, he's a big hitter, you know, so a throwback in that way, but also has a great one-timer as well. That's why he scored 20-plus goals in his draft-eligible season. And also get a little bit of luck with Victor Eklund falling to them at 16. But they also traded Noah Dobson. Like, what are the Islanders up to? Are they rebuilding? Is this a retool? Did they just not want to give Noah Dobson that contract? I'm having a hard time trying to figure out what Matthew Darche is trying to do with this roster as he takes it over as their general manager.
I wonder if there's just a reset more than anything. We can talk about rebuilds and retools. How much of this was just, I'm going to build this my way, and I'm saddled with these contracts of Mayfield, Pelech, Pulock, and it's going to take some while to really get out of this. Engvall.
Yeah.
A lot of decisions were made prior to me arriving. And if I'm doing a full reset, let's start it right now. I know there was an intent to obviously go get Higgins as well, and that would have been a huge boon to season tickets and local fans. But how much of that was just, let's just restart. Now we get this host of picks, and we really start to build it in the vision of starting from scratch.
Well, and I think what you want to do is you have to kind of do the small R reset and rebuild, reset, whatever you want to call it now, to give yourself a chance, if you're keeping Barzal and Horvat, to have players to give them a run at doing something competitive the next 3 or 4 years. And if you can turn these players into players by year three, then by the time Barzal's 31 and Horvat's 33 or 33, then at that point, do you have a 2 or 3 year window where you can compete with those guys until the next generation takes over? And that's kind of what I would guess would be the plan. And to Bick's point, we have that many contracts that are immovable. You get put into a tough spot.
The Calgary Flames, San Jose selected at 53 Cole McKinney, and the Calgary Flames have just selected Theo Stoxelius, big-bodied forward with intelligence and skill as the profile from Elite Prospects. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Bick Nizar will have more draft coverage on the other side across the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're back. The NHL entry draft continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Dan Riccio, Bick Nizar, Satyar Shah in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. The Vegas Golden Knights trading up with the Nashville Predators. And so Vegas moves into number 55 at the draft as we speak. They are on the clock, as they say. Just before we took the break, Theo Stoxelius was taken by the Calgary Flames, and the Flames got a lot of praise for their work in the draft yesterday, taking Cole Reschny, and then Cullen Potter as well with the 32nd pick out of Arizona State. Potter looks like a really skilled player, could be a top six center. And then Reschny, I know some Canucks fans wanted the Canucks to take Reschny with their 15th overall selection. Calgary ends up getting him at 18. He at least as a draft eligible, profiles as a more offensive player than Braden Coutts, who was taken 15 by the Vancouver Canucks.
Well, Go ahead. No, just, I like the targeted approach here for Calgary, right? Yeah. They start building out the defense. What's the long-term future of... Is Hanzik going to work out at center? Then they had Coronado, a tweener type, but now here they are, just center, and they're attacking it. And certainly, if it starts to work out for them, they're starting to build that depth that they're going to need integrated into the lineup.
Yeah, actually, I like what Calgary's been doing here. And Cole Reschny, you guys mentioned, a really nice player. And Cullen Potter, you talk about a fast player, played in the NCAA, had some nice chops as well, scoring. And he played in his draft year in the NCAA, Cullen Potter did, and he had a solid season. He's a guy that can take a big step. And Stokselius is another guy that... he was expected to go in the second round, but it's maybe an outside chance that he goes in the first round. But that frame of his ability to play in different situations, I like, again, some of the variety Calgary's drafted here. We praised how the Preds have drafted some players of different variety and skill sets and different positions. And here's Calgary going with centers, but these guys might be able to play wing. They have different skill sets, and you can see all three of these guys play for the team down the road. So I like what Calgary's done here.
The Vegas Golden Knights taking Jacob Eyes-Wozniak out of Sweden, a winger that's a lanky, dual threat potential shooter and distributor out of the J20 National, and did play 13 games with Luleå in the SHL as well. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I do that to you with Italian things all the time, so feel free to go full Swede on me. That's fine.
It's had to.
That was great.
I deserve that. Now I know how it feels.
Yeah, right? It's not fun, is it? Yeah, reach. Get a taste of your own medicine.
Fair enough. Tampa Bay Lightning are on the clock at number 56 in the NHL. Entry draft. So Calgary has been busy, as mentioned earlier as well. Kevin Ball signing a 6-year extension with the Calgary Flames, and you know, for a lot of these contracts, maybe some of the hometown discounts will differ from this, like the Matt Duchene contract or even the John Tavares contract. The reported Connor Garland 6x6. I know there was a lot of sticker shock for Canucks fans on that one. We just have to reframe how we feel about and how we look at contracts, because everything's probably about $1 million more than you would expect it and what we're used to seeing.
Yeah, and that's just the reality of where the cap is going. And the other thing being, there aren't enough players to go around, and you're seeing teams be more reluctant to get rid of players that they would have maybe been more willing to get rid of a year or two ago. Not only with the cap, but 32 teams, there isn't enough good players to go around, and you're seeing teams really, you know, hodl their assets, so to speak, and hold on to these players, right? And I think that's a big change. And when that happens, you have to figure, well, maybe this guy's getting paid more than I want him, but do I want the player or not?
And it's a reflection of the UFA market as well, right? Are you going to solve your answers here moving forward in the next handful of days? And again, I look at a team like Vancouver. To me, like, there's an element of fear in some of these transactions with some of these proposed extensions here of and go getting a Evander Kane of, look, we're not going to be a destination in free agency, let alone at the top end of the market. Mm-hmm. But what about in the mid-range or low end of the market, right? Like, what are the opportunities here for a free agent to step in here and say, okay, look, I see the pathways to where I can have success? It is a roster build that is full of bodies, as we mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of spots of like, oh, I can go step into that second line role immediately.
Yeah.
And even if I do... Am I playing with Elias Pettersson? Do you have a second line center? What's the situation here? So you go out and you go get a guy in a contract year like Evander Kane. You have an opportunity to sign a Connor Garland a year early, even though you're in this phase. And the only way to become an attractive destination is go win. And now you're in a spot where we can't really make big improvements. So do you just double down on ourselves and say, if we can win, then we become an attractive destination next year? And that's why I didn't like the timing of the Garland extension, potentially, as it trends that way.
At number 56, the Tampa Bay Lightning taking Ethan Zadda out of the Niagara Ice Dogs in the OHL as another centerman off the board. And then the Philadelphia Flyers, who seem to be on the clock with every three picks. Guess what? They've gone with another 6'5 player.
I love the Flyers, man.
57th pick in the draft. Awesome. Matthew Gard is their latest selection.
I'm not even being facetious. I love it. Lean into who you want to be as a team. This is who you got as a head coach. This is what your identity as an organization has been. And you want to reset that and reframe what you want to be. And the Flyers are leaning into that hard. And not all these guys are going to pan out. You know, they're going to bust a few. And this always happens. But when you look at the sheer number of players with talent and size they have drafted in the first two rounds this year, I love what the Flyers have been doing in terms of draft theory and how you're building your team and really leaning into your identity. This is really well done by the Flyers, at least through this part. We'll see what happens with development.
Yeah.
But I like an organization who knows what they want to be, and then they nail that in the draft.
But also, how do all the pieces work together, right? And I think that's an important conversation. And maybe there's an element of trauma still coming from the Cutter Gauthier experience of like, hey, we just need more bodies at the center position because we can't have it all hang on one guy. But you have Michkov, right? You have Luchenko. Can you start surrounding these guys with big bodies as well on top of the overall Flyers brand of it all? Mm-hmm. But now, I look at Gard and say, okay, you're positioning this guy to do a specific role in your team build if these other guys work out as well. And he can come in and do exactly his thing. You know, we're talking about Braden Coutts here, obviously, in Vancouver. It's, okay, we want to see more offense for him. If the rest of the Flyers build works, this player just has to come in and do his job. And
yep.
I think there's a lot of trust in from NHL circles that he will be able to do the defensive responsibility well. And as that whole Flyers group grows together, you can immediately see the vision on top of all the other picks they've made here.
Yeah, Shane Van Sagi as well. And now you take this kid.
They took Jack Murtaugh too.
Well.
Another big player who's a limited development time, but still shows pretty good penchants for scoring goals. Yeah. So the Flyers are really interesting right now. And Matthew Gard out of the Red Deer Rebels is their latest selection at number 57, 6'5 center, defense first center. And, you know, when you know what your role is and you can really hone in on that, it seems like Matthew Gard is already a player who understands how he's going to make it to the NHL kind of thing.
No doubt. Okay, so a couple more picks now. So 58, the Preds have taken another goalie, Jack Ivankovic. So they're stacking goalies in the first couple of rounds here. The Nashville Predators and the LA Kings at 59 take Wojtek Char, the left winger. But how about the Preds? I really like what they were doing. Do we love them taking two goalies in the first two rounds?
They didn't take a goalie in the first round.
No, sorry, you're right. You're right.
It was Columbus who took Andreyanov,
the
Russian goalie at number 20 in the draft. But the Preds have had a really interesting draft to this point. And, you know, Brady Martin was their selection at 5, took a couple of defensemen later in the second round, and also had an earlier first round, and then also had an earlier first, second round selection as well. On the clock now, the Anaheim Ducks are getting ready to make another selection, and kind of get reminded as this draft goes through how many of these picks had been traded. I mean, Philadelphia seems to be making every third selection of the draft,
and they traded picks to get Zegras too. They would have made every pick in the second round if they didn't trade for Zegras.
It was kind of trending that way. So as far as free agency is concerned, as we continue for the draft, another player taken off the board, Lasse Boljes, defenseman, going at number 60 to the Anaheim Ducks. Free agency, so Sam Bennett's off the board. John Tavares is off the board. What is there to get excited about on Tuesday for signing season, July 1? We've talked about this from our Canucks lens. There's just not really anything there to help you.
You're pumped up if you're Pew Suter's accountant.
You're just
fired up, man.
Pew Suter and Mikhail Granlund are the top two centermen available in free agency on Tuesday.
Yeah, I guess until Claude Giroux signs, he would be another guy.
Yeah.
You know, but does he play more wing?
He takes face-offs and plays wing
mostly, right?
Yeah.
But that's the guy. And then you're looking at guys that are more role players, whether it's Nick Bjugstad, Lars Eller types, if they make it to free agency. And then you go down the lineup, Radek Faksa. Does a guy like Christian Dvorak move the needle after he had a good finish to the season? Does somebody view him as a player that you take a flyer on a one-year deal? or Jack Roslovic. Now, he played a lot of wing for Carolina, mm-hmm. but these are the options. You know, it's very thin, and a lot of these guys, to your point, they're not really centers, let alone second-line centers you're going to lean on. And I know the Canucks are linked to Mikael Granlund, but any team trying to find a solution down the middle in free agency, you're not finding a long-term real solution. They're stopgaps or some flyers at best here.
And some of the guys you mentioned there are far more specialty players than I would say even role players, right? Like Bukestad kind of just does his thing. Roslovic, I think, can handle the puck and can spread the puck around. Mm. But as you mentioned, it's like, yeah, he gets moved to wing from time to time. And unless you have specific players profiled around those styles of players, I don't know if you're going to get the effectiveness out of a Roslovic, who, again, I like as a player, but he's very specific in what he brings. And unless you can make it work around you, some teams are going to find themselves searching on July 1st.
Disappointment for Canucks fans everywhere, as at number 61, the Boston Bruins have selected Liam Pettersson, a defenseman out of Sweden.
So we're robbed of the Canucks taking yet another Pettersson. Why? Like, what is going on with this draft? Why are they snooping? Why are they sneaking all these picks that we wanted? What's going on?
6'2", left shot defenseman.
I thought the Canucks were only allowed to draft Pettersson.
Where's he from? Or sorry, where's he play? Vexjö?
Vexjö.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I tried.
Yeah, it was not bad.
It was pretty
bad.
Close.
I cleared it with him first.
Yeah, he tried it first, yeah.
Lanky puck-moving defenseman with strong transition results is the profile on Liam Pettersson, taken 61st by the Boston Bruins. So Canucks will not have the opportunity to select another Pettersson in this draft, unless they go way off the board. That's also a possibility. Let's just find another Pettersson to take.
I'm sure they'll find one. They'll make one up.
Ivan Ryabkin is the latest selection, centerman for the Carolina Hurricanes, who've traded down a bunch and, as they usually do, seem to be getting value with all their trade downs and extra draft picks. This a famous strategy of Bill Belichick in the draft, and Pete Carroll's Seattle Seahawks as well, and Carolina is the NHL team that has exploited it to the fullest.
I tried buying a custom Seahawks jersey that was trade back. didn't
quite work out.
Wouldn't accept my online order.
A Kyle Dubas trade as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and somebody texted in about Kyle Dubas and said, let me see if I can find it here because I don't want to.
It was essentially, is he going to sewer the Penguins drafts?
Just like he sewered the Leafs drafts.
Yeah.
So I know some Leafs fans aren't too excited, but the Leafs are on the clock right now. Ben Kevin was taken with the 63rd pick, the right winger, to the New Jersey Devils. The Leafs are on the clock right now.
Final pick of the second round, Leafs on the clock.
And the Canucks have the first pick in the third round coming up right afterwards here. And there are some players available that kind of fall into that B prospect range and guys that were viewed as legitimate second rounders. And I'm curious to see where the Leafs go here, Reach, because are they going to go after some talent or are they still looking under Trey Living? Do we find a player with some size, some physicality to play a role for us here? Because there are some different options for both those available on the board right now.
Leafs need a lot for their prospect pool. I think, all the trades that they've been making and some of the misses in Kyle Dubas's draft era have really started to put a lot of pressure on their draft pool. They need a little bit of everything, and they didn't have a first round pick this year. They don't have a first round pick for either of the next two seasons as well. So kind of puts a lot of pressure on your lone second round pick here this year.
And there are a couple of centers available. I'd say maybe the highest rated one available is probably Tyler Hopkins, who played in Kingston of the OHL, a 6'1", 181, can do a bit of everything for you. Didn't have the biggest point producing year, had 20 goals and 67, but a bit of an all-around player. Is that the type of guy you look to draft here at the end of the second round?
Leafs getting a helpful hometown discount from John Tavares. Like, I don't know if people realize how much of a discount Tavares took on this contract because, like, he scored, what, 37, 38 goals this year? Mm-hmm. He was 12th in goals scored across the National Hockey League. I know he's older, and I know there's questions about how much he can really play center at this point of his career. But to take under a $4.5 million cap hit and take less than $20 million, really, at the very least, I felt like he should have gotten the kind of the Joe Pavelski contract that Dallas gave a number of years ago, like 3 years, $21 million. Mm-hmm. The equivalent of that in this cap era was very much something that could have been there for John Tavares, but he took the hometown discount.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Well, also good for him.
And Leafs have needed somebody to take the hometown discount.
Yeah. And the Leafs have made their selection. Tinas Luke Kobelar, 64th overall center. I can't say I'm very familiar with this player.
Nope.
It's deeper down the list.
Yeah. He's a guy. I mean, maybe this is a Dubas type pick. Off the board a little bit. I haven't really seen him ranked on a ton of lists. Mm-hmm. I'm quickly looking up here. He's a Norwegian prospect, center prospect, 2007 born. And so this is what Elite Prospects has: a big body, yet raw forward with good mechanical base, intriguing offensive flashes, could have more untapped potential, but there's a lot of uncertainty around the projection, and is viewed as a guy who skates decently, but hockey sense, shooting, passing, handling, all has to come together. But if you look at some of the numbers he's posed, and you look at his size, 6'3", they're going after a bit of a project here to Toronto Maple Leafs, a Norwegian player at that.
He was in the mid-50s at the Central Scouting.
For European skaters?
Yeah, for the international skaters, yeah. And unranked at the midterms. So, yeah, this was a deeper pull for them.
Projection pick by the Maple Leafs here with Tinas Luke Kobelar as their latest selection. 6'3", 176 pounds, left shot centerman for the Maple Leafs here. He had 21 points, 8 goals in 43 games with the J20 National, or in the J20 National with Lexans, and also played for Norway at the World Junior Championships, yeah, as well. So a projection pick. He is one of the younger players in the draft at still 17 years old, will turn 18 later on in July. So something to keep an eye on. Clearly a projection pick by the Maple Leafs.
Yeah. So the Canucks are coming up next, and we'll get the Canucks pick, and after that we'll take the break. But a lot of people are asking us, Quinn is asking us, others, should the Canucks take Cameron Schmidt, the Vancouver Giants prospect here with the first pick in the third round? Cameron Schmidt has great speed, incredible shot, super talented kid. But the problem is he's what, 5'7"?
Yeah.
Right? And that's the reason why he is still available in the draft this far down. We know that
had Canucks a first round draft grade by some of the some of the industry.
Yeah, but the size part of it. The Canucks took their goalie prospect, and we talked about this before that the Canucks would take a goalie at some point today. I thought if they would take a goalie with the second pick, it would be because they acquired an extra pick.
But I wonder if just because there was a couple of goalies already went.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of those things. I'm not gonna, you know, it's one of those things. I don't know enough about the goalie to have a strong opinion yet on it. We'll do some research on it. But they took their guy here. Do you take a swing or do you take a safer player? Because there are, again, I mentioned there's some players available. The guy I brought up who's still on the board is Tyler Hopkins. There's even Hayden Papanakis, the right-handed center. Luca Romano as well, right-handed player. So there are some players available that can play that premium position. And even a guy like Bruno Osmanis, a right-handed guy who's available. And Christian Epperson's a bit older. He's a bit older. He's a draft plus one player, Christian Epperson. But there are some options available forward wise, but I can see them certainly looking at a guy like Cameron Schmidt.
Canucks, while the NHL draft is in break on television, Canucks have selected Kieran Dervin out of St. Andrews College. A 6'1 centerman, has an NHL ready frame, but very much still, again, a projection player, as he is really only played a brief amount of time in the OHL with Kingston, but most of his games have come out of St. Andrews College with a U18 AAA squad. So big time. It's clearly one of the a scout's pick in out there in Ontario that's seen him play and clearly probably like him. So Kieran Dervin, the selection for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. But as you were saying, Sat, it had you traded down, acquired another pick, can you do kind of the luxury home run swing type move that, again, like, I'm a big fan of Cameron Schmidt's game, but you are in a spot where, with only three spots and no fourth round pick here, three picks and no fourth round pick, are you in a spot where you can take kind of a luxury pick? This is a development player that goes down the middle of the lineup.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. It's just they need centers.
They do.
Absolutely need centers. As much as it hurts to see a Cam Schmidt kind of get passed over here, This team desperately needs bodies down the middle.
Yeah, and I get it from that perspective. And I like Hammerschmidt's talent a lot. It's one of those things where a team really has to believe in him and really, you know, have a situation where they feel like he can have success. Otherwise, it doesn't really work out. And as far as Kieran Durbin is concerned, 6'1", 183, when you start looking at some of the prospect profiles on him, he's considered to have a frame that's pretty good already. And he already has a bit of a mature two-way game. Can get a bit faster, of course. The physicality is okay. He needs to get a bit better with some of his skills. But based on some of the projections and some of the scouting reports about him, is he plays hard, has some size, has a good two-way game, and has some decent intelligence as well. So could be interesting to see what he becomes.
The latest selection going to the Chicago Blackhawks out of the Kamloops Blazers. Know we were getting some texts about this player earlier out of Kamloops. Nathan Bem, left winger, over 6'1", right shot, inside driven winger with game-breaking game and a knack for dominating entire shifts with a lot of runway for growth. Needs to work on his skating a little bit as he continues to grow in his career. All right, we're going to hit the break, come back. The Los Angeles Kings are the next team on the clock. Keep an eye on what's happening with your Canadian squads as well. It's Dan Riccio, Bick Nizar, Satyar Shah, and you are listening to NHL Entry Draft Coverage on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Back in on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're in the Kintec studio here in Vancouver, covering the NHL Entry Draft. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Bick Nizar. So while we were away, only one pick off the board. Kurban Limitsov selected by the Carolina Hurricanes, who are having another draft where they just seemingly line up with a lot of the industry as far as like best player available when they are selecting. And so that they always get great draft grades afterwards.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that works, right? I would always say when we look at the lists that are public, don't take it
as gospel.
Yeah, like don't assume that the public lists available are the, you know, complete authority on all these draft picks, because every team has scouts. And not to say that there aren't people that are in the industry that aren't smarter than NHL scouts, not taking anything away from them, but I would say that we get too married sometimes to what the lists say. But ultimately it comes down to how you develop players and bring them along. But to give Carolina credit, they've done a good job with their drafting and development too, right? But I'd say one of the, like, take it with a grain of salt, especially considering the amount of time that is spent on really evaluating a lot of these prospects. And we'll talk to Shane Malloy coming up in a little bit, but I think sometimes people underestimate how much of a crapshoot this truly is, especially when you get outside like the top, like real high-end picks.
And Shane does a great job of contextualizing that, and we'll chat with him later. But it's so difficult to turn prospect into potential into pros. So difficult. And that's why, you know, the Carolinas of the world are taking as many picks as they can. And that's why when you increase the volume of these players into your organization, yeah, okay, some of them will work out and you get the opportunities. And that's why the grades are good. But yeah, like there's a sense of familiarity of just having a public list and say, oh, well, look, they got the 33rd best player per this list at 67. So that's why it sounds fantastic. But we always talk about the diversity of opinion that's necessary across the league, and you get 32 different lists, they're all going to look different. And so certain teams are going to value certain things. So it's always about what makes sense for that team. And yes, from the outside, we can say, hey, it's worked out, but it has to be integrated. It has to see the progression. It has to come out into pro games. It has to come out to successful development plans and actually prolonged careers leading to wins. So The comfort of how it feels after day two of the draft is short-lived.
The Seattle Kraken at number 68, selecting Will Reynolds. It's now the Boston Bruins on the clock at number 69. Nice, in the draft. It's an update on Kieran Durbin, who was selected 65 by the Vancouver Canucks. He played high school mostly this year with St. Andrews College in Ontario. Did play 10 games with the Kingston Frontenacs, where he had a goal and two assists. But as one of our texters points out, he is committed to joining Penn State University in the NCAA for next season.
Yeah, and I got a couple texts about this from some people that watch him and talked about how he's a player that's that's on his own trajectory here, and that there's no rush for where he's going to end up. And even Joey Kimmer was texting me about how he did great at the combine, and he is going to Penn State. And we're going to see a lot of CHL players go over there too the next little while, and it looks like he's going to be one of those players. And Penn State, I mean, looks like it's going to be a pretty strong hockey program next season.
NHL ready frame with a mature two-way game to you know. Raise your hand if you say this is a trait that the Vancouver Canucks seem to value.
Yeah, and you know, I asked about this, and I just got a text from another scout telling me that at the draft combine, he was one of the players that really impressed scouts, and there were a number of teams that were hoping to grab him in the third to fourth round range, and it's a good pick by the Canucks. That's one NHL scout texting me back.
So that's the latest on Kieran Dervin as we continue to go through the NHL entry draft. Probably the top rated player available is at this point, now that we are into the mid third round, is probably Cameron Schmidt of the Vancouver Giants. Had a really strong year, really impressive kid as well. As you can imagine, as somebody at his height listed at 5'7", 161, he does have a bit of a chip on his shoulder, but in 61 games in the Dub this year with Vancouver, he had 40 goals in those 61 games with 78 points and even added 4 goals in 5 playoff games for the Vancouver Giants.
Yeah, and
the scoring profile is legit.
Just to go back to our conversation here, right?
Yeah.
Me personally, like I'd be very tantalized to take him
at this stage of the draft. It seems like a no-brainer,
or even a little bit earlier, right?
Yeah,
because you don't have to project some of the skills. The speed is evident. The shot is evident, and just the natural goal scoring ability, very evident. It's just about, is that going to play well at the NHL level, that he's going to be able to utilize the shot, that he's going to be able to work through contact and all these things. And we have some good text coming in here. It says, well, Brandon Gallagher is also a short player. Again, stylistically, different players, obviously. Mm-hmm. But given the depth of this draft, I am very surprised that he's still available, because the tools are very obvious. And as much as we talk about it, well, you can't teach size and all these things, you also can't teach that level of skating.
No, you're right. But I do think, I'm not surprised though, honestly, and I'm not trying to take anything away from him. And I know you guys will turn to me and say, you always fade smaller hockey players,
well,
right?
You do.
I mean, you're not wrong. Okay.
If Sat was drafting, he would draft like the Philadelphia Flyers. 6'5", sure. Sign me up.
I'm very surprised. I love the Flyers draft so far. No, but so I think, especially when we look at it in light of what the Florida Panthers have done, right? And a big phrase you're hearing, especially heading into this draft, is bully hockey, you know, because that's what they want to build teams towards. And you saw it through the first round. We saw it in the second round. Teams are really prioritizing size in this year's draft. We saw it in last year's draft as well. I mean, Logan Stankoven went in the second round. Some thought he should have gone in the first and showed really well. And I think you look at Cameron Schmidt, there's some similarities. Stankoven was probably a little bit bigger than Schmidt was, and I think that's part of the problem with Schmidt. He's even smaller than what a guy like Logan Stankoven was a couple years ago, taken in the second round. But is he going to be available even later? And to me, if he's there in the fourth round or even the fifth round, then it becomes a massive, like, you have to take that player at that point.
Yeah.
But given where the game is trending and where the league is going, I'm not surprised we're seeing a lot of teams be reluctant to draft these smaller players, because the view in the league right now is you need size.
The next selection going to the Montreal Canadiens, as they just traded up with the Boston Bruins for this pick at 69 to select Hayden Papanekis, centerman that has been taken from the Kelowna Rockets. Hayden Papanekis going to the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah, and you know what? Like on this is what guy we mentioned when the Canucks and Leafs were picking, that he's a player that was one of the higher rated ones on the public list that was available, ranked 43rd on Elite Prospects. Player that has size, right-handed shot, has physicality, can play a bit of a two-way game. Now obviously there's his skill level has to come along. If you look at the year he had in the WHL this past year, only had 4 goals, 12 assists, and 16 points, so that's probably why he was taken a bit later here in the third round. But a player with a lot of size, physicality, and could end up being a two-way player that can play on the PK.
That's the latest selection. Now Sean Barnhill has taken to the New York Rangers with pick number 70. It's the Buffalo Sabres that are now on the clock at 71. Sabres traded J.J. Paterka earlier this week. Still very much in trade conversations about Bowen Byram. If he gets moved out, they traded away Connor Clifton today to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Bit of a cap dump move where they sent a second round pick and Connor Clifton to Pittsburgh to make that work, get Connor Timmins and Béliveau in return, Isaac Béliveau in return. So Kevin Adams maybe has one of the most difficult jobs in hockey, I would say, because like you've been drafting for a while and you've collected a good amount of talent, but seemingly none of them really want to stay with you. And I know they've got Tage Thompson to commit and they had Dylan Cousins commit and obviously traded him for Josh Norris. Rasmus Dahlin is also committed, but relatively, you know, it's been really tough for the Sabres to continue building because they've just been stuck in the mud for so long.
Yeah. And it's the toughest thing to get out of. Right. And they were so close just here recently, but just missed the playoffs.
All right. We do have the second round draft choice by the Vancouver Canucks. Alexei Medvedev joins us. Thanks for this, Alexei. Congratulations. How are you feeling right now?
Yeah, thank you, guys. I'm really happy right now. Yeah, it's great. Really excited.
Love that. How much did you know that Vancouver had their eyes on you here?
It was a little unexpected, but just so happy to end up here and get drafted by Vancouver. It's amazing.
So in terms of your process throughout all this, I know it has to be exciting yet nerve-wracking. Where did you expect to go? Were you hoping to go higher? Like, where did you think you would end up be drafted here on the weekend?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking second round, and I think 47 is really good for me. So I'm, and especially being picked by Vancouver, I think that's what matters the most. So just the team, so I'm just really happy right now, yeah.
A lot of success this year for you and the team. You know, what have you learned over the course of this season for London?
What's that, sir?
What have you learned over the course of this season for a very successful run for your team?
Yeah, it was a great experience. We had a special group and a special team, and just kind of learning from those guys and seeing what a winning locker room looks like, and just getting that winning experience. You know, it's going to help me in the long run. So really, really happy I got to do that with the Knights this year.
Does it help you developing as a goalie, you know, getting to play with so many NHL prospects like Sam Dickinson and Easton Cowan? You know, we saw Henry Brustevich get drafted yesterday as well. Does it help you prepare as a goalie, having this kind of talent to practice with all the time?
Yeah, for sure. We compete really hard in practice, and it's a big deal for us. So we practice the way we play. So that's kind of our mindset. And yeah, just facing those guys in practice definitely helps you to get your confidence, just to develops you so well. So it's great.
Well, I want to spend some time to get us to get you to tell us a bit about your journey to get to this point. Obviously born in Russia, played through Canada, playing for the London Knights, and been here in Canada for many years, of course, and you're a goalie that has also grown in size over the past year. Now you're over 6'2". What's your journey been like, and what's it been like coming to Canada and having success over the years?
Yeah, I was I came over to Canada at 14 years old, so it was a really neat and fun experience, and I feel like people around me just made it so smooth for me, made me feel comfortable, and just it was huge for my development. I think coming over here worked out so well for me, and I'm really grateful. I'm really happy I made that decision.
Do you have a favorite goalie you like to watch and try to model your game after?
Yeah, I love Igor Shesterkin, and he's played in my hometown, St. Petersburg, so I used to watch him as a kid, and I love his game, so that's the guy for me.
You're going to have to change that answer to Thatcher Demko now.
yeah, I'm going to be learning from him. Yeah,
sure. Have you had a chance to visit Vancouver, or when you come up for Dev Camp, is that going to be your first chance to see the mountains and the ocean?
Yeah, that's going to be my first time, so I'm just really excited right now.
Alexi, congratulations. Oh, this is a big day for you. Enjoy it. Congratulations again on getting drafted.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
There is Alexi Medvedev, the second-round draft choice by the Vancouver Canucks.
And has had a growth spurt, right? I mean, you go back about a year and a bit, he was under 6 feet tall, and now he's over 6'2". I'll bring up the combine measurements for him, too, to see exactly what his height is at. But we know goalies nowadays... the size is a big part of it. Like, they want to have goalies that are well over 6'3", but if you hit that 6'2" mark, just about above, like, you're at the very least at the threshold. Anytime it's a bit shorter now with how the game is going, you kind of wonder, but he has decent size, and the athleticism is something that apparently plays too.
Yeah, again, for me, it's always just, can you meet a certain mark?
Yeah.
And then everything beyond that is bonus, because you need certain fundamental requirements, right? How you track the puck, how you move your feet, and that's why someone like UC Soros can thrive so well, because he's so good at some of those things. So you can be a little bit shorter, but you need a certain threshold unless you're elite at those things. So if you meet a certain threshold, certainly an encouraging thing for him.
This text coming into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. I thought the Canucks had good goalie depth. Is there something special about this pick? Again, the growth spurt and the athleticism really do make him an interesting talent, an intriguing talent. We know it can always be difficult with netminders, but he was also with a London Knights team that had a ton of success this year, winning in the OHL. So I think there's a lot of tools there that you like, and you can see and project a lot of development. As far as the Canucks depth chart goes,
they haven't drafted a goalie for 2 years.
A goalie for 2 years. I think a lot hinges on whether or not they sign up Thatcher Demko for an extension here and how that looks. Because if they do that, then they're probably moving on from Artur Shilovs, and their depth chart is still pretty good at the near NHL level, where they will have Tolopilo, Ty Young, whom they drafted a couple of years ago, and Aku Koskinvuau, who's been on a longer development path since they drafted him as well.
Yeah, it made sense. Like, we talked about this on our shows a couple of weeks ago. We guaranteed the Canucks are going to draft a goalie. And the question was, how high are they drafting one? They took one with their second pick in this year's draft. And with Arturs, I just don't see a path for Arturs in Vancouver unless he goes unclaimed on waivers and gets a shot at some point when somebody gets injured. So if you can actually get an asset back and move forward, I don't think it's the worst case scenario here. And I know a lot of fans are very married to Arturs because of how well he played throughout the Abbey playoff run, was the MVP. There's a lot to like about him, but I'd say sometimes be careful projecting that because he had AHL success, it's going to carry over. There's a lot that he has to do and get better at the NHL level, but clearly a talented goaltender. But you start going through it, you have to make a decision somewhere. And are you enough of a believer that you can feel like Shilovs is going to be not only a good backup, but a good starter to trade one of the other guys? I can understand why they're reluctant to do so.
It's a tough spot. It's a tough spot to have these three goalies, and you're committed to the second one. Your high-end guy, injury prone, you got to make a decision on. The third guy is kind of the next wave through. And you're just kind of stuck in this spot here. And it's probably most prudent to just take Demko and bet on the upside and the health meeting a certain level, because now you're insulated because you have Lankinen and the bottom won't drop out. And because, you know, fans are getting invested in Artur Shilovs, and he was put in such a tough spot last year and thrived in the playoffs, it's a reminder that this is a business, right? And there's only so many spots for so many guys, and eventually things could just kind of come to a close.
The latest in the NHL entry draft, we've missed a couple of picks here. David Bedkowski going to the Buffalo Sabres. Noah Reed, centerman, going to the Anaheim Ducks. To Pittsburgh at 73, defenseman Charlton Trithui and Luca Romano going to the New York Islanders at number 74.
Much later than I thought.
Right shot centerman, good transition puck skills that you really can see being a puck transporter at the NHL level.
Given that we've seen the centers valued so highly in this draft class and the size players as well, again, he's not towering, but he is a center and he's a right-hander. It does feel like this is like the most positionally efficient draft we've seen in a while,
yeah,
where
Which is weird that it's been so underrated, but like there's been a lot of centermen and like a lot of projectable centermen and defensemen.
Yeah,
true. And because it's the righty, like I'm surprised he's at 74 here.
You're not wrong, but I will also say this, and if it is a weaker draft outside a certain range, then you probably will lean more on the premium positions if you're looking at a bunch of guys that may as well go for the guys with the better positions, right? But to your point, I don't disagree. I think even when you see Trethewey, he's a guy that when you looked at some of the public lists, like that was ranked higher, and now he's being taken here at 73. Even Luca Romano. And I do think the depth of this year's draft was better than people really said. And some of these players that people said, yeah, these are this is a top 50 guy, and you're not going to get any players better than this. Now they're available at 74, 73. And this happens every draft, guys, where we think there's 50 guys based on these lists. Like, these are the guys. Nobody else is good after this. And as often is the case, a big number of those guys are still available in the third and fourth rounds, and that's what we're seeing here tonight.
So the draft continues on. 75 overall is next on the clock, that being the Detroit Red Wings. And, you know, we continue through this draft as we've seen it develop. We get a text here. Is every kid in this draft 6'5"?
Well, I mean, anybody who's over 6 foot is being drafted. Anybody who isn't is like being passed over, it seems like.
Yeah. Michael Pradel, just drafted by Detroit, goalie. So Detroit adding to their stable of goalies. 6'4" is the measurement.
Wake up today assuming Reach is going to have goalie Detroit taste.
Yo, there you go. Took another goalie, Michel Pradel.
Steve Yzerman is just, you know what, we got to take as many shots, as many kicks at the can as we can with our goalie stable.
I guess for him to be as many saves as we can, not shots.
I bet you feels like he's in his bag, right? He's like, oh man, I'm just picking all the goalies.
Well, like, it's just a strange strategy, especially because goalies don't have a ton of trade value, right? Every situation is different, but you just traded for John Gibson. You have Sebastian Kosa. You have other guys that are in the organization too.
But clearly they're not good enough.
So clearly not good enough. So just take as many as many darts thrown at the board as you possibly can. But the texter's not wrong. There is a definite, you know, size factor that is going on, and through the second and even in this third round, like I look up at the screen and you see the profile of every single player. It's like, oh, another 6'5" defenseman gone off the board, 6'6" defenseman gone off the board.
Well, look at it this way. The Canucks have actually drafted one of the shortest players so far because he's listed under 6 feet tall. And there's been, a handful of guys. So in the first round, Cullen Potter was one who was under 6 feet. Cole Reshny, that makes it two. Victor Eklund makes it three. And Benjamin Kindle makes it four. James Hagan's five. And these are all 5'11 guys. And they have Kutz at 6 feet, but he's a 5'11 and a half. But my point being, like, he's in that range where in the first round is one of the shorter players taken, so to speak. And you didn't see a single guy who's 5'7", 5'8 be taken high in this draft this year.
Even in this third round, not a single player listed under 6 feet per NHL.com. Detroit is still on the clock here as they will select at number 76 as well after taking the goaltender Michel Pradel with their latest pick.
Yeah, the shortest player taken so far is 5'10".
Mm.
There's only been a handful of players under 6 feet that have been drafted so far midway through the third round. I think that tells you where the league is trending right now.
So that's the way things are going. So we'll keep an eye on Cameron Schmidt, certainly the best scorer that is still remaining as a draft eligible from the Vancouver Giants, but undersized at 5'7".
Is Sat drafting for every team today, question mark?
Yes, that's probably what's happening. Sat's got his... you keep sending texts over there, so I'm wondering.
Sorry, I'll stop.
No, it's fine. I'm getting intel.
I'm just giving propaganda.
There is
size propaganda.
A trade happening here as the Detroit Red Wings are working on something here at number 76 after drafting at number 75. We will give you the details on that and continue with our draft coverage. Columbus now on the clock with number 76 in the third round of the entry draft. You are listening to Sportsnet's NHL entry draft coverage on the Sportsnet Radio Network.